Awesome to welcome Liberty University men's basketball coach Richie McKay to the basketball podcast. Coach McKay led the Flames to an unprecedented success since returning in 2015. In his second stint at Liberty, McKay has guided the team to 720 plus win seasons, including a school record 30 victories in 2019-20. Under his leadership, Liberty captured three A-Sun tournament titles, four regular season championships, and earned its first NCAA tournament win in program history in 2019. Over the past six seasons, Liberty has won 149 games, eighth most in the nation during that span. Before returning to Liberty, McKay spent six seasons as associate head coach at the University of Virginia under Tony Bennett. During his tenure, the Cavaliers posted a 136-64 record, won the ACC championship in 2014, and made three NCAA tournament appearances. McKay's head coaching career spans over two decades, with previous stops at New Mexico, Oregon State, Colorado State, and Portland State. In total, McKay has amassed over 400 career wins and holds the highest winning percentage in Liberty program history. His coaching accolades include multiple Coach of the Year honors, national recognition for leadership, and a reputation for building programs that compete with integrity and purpose. Hey, Coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. How do you decide who your biggest impact players are? Traditional stats don't tell the whole story, which is why high-level pro and college teams rely on analytics systems like Hoopsalytics to make data-driven lineup decisions. Examining team stats when a player is on the floor tells a more compelling story. For example, you can use net points per possession to determine your best two-way players, as well as your offensive and defensive stars. Or use the team rebounding percentage for each player to see who has the biggest impact on rebounding. The results may surprise you. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free. Coach McKay, welcome to the basketball podcast.
Chris, honored to be on. If I can, I'm just going to go full disclosure on you. Being on with you is a little bit intimidating just because of how much knowledge you have of the game and the amount of prep work that you do in your guest and in trying to unpack their different ways of doing things. I'm incredibly thankful for you, man. You've helped grow the game in such a way. I think you probably hear all the time, but many of us are fans of you and the work that you've done. So if I was hard to get a hold of or hard to reach, and I'll just go full disclosure on you, I always worry or have a little bit of angst about these opportunities because the enemy would want me to believe that I'm not enough. And we all have these negative emotions that kind of can dictate some of our decisions. And you just can't ever get your identity from what you do, what you have, or what other people think about you. So I'm probably not enough, but I'm just going to be me. And hopefully there might be one soul out there, especially if my wife is listening, that this might add some value to.
I'll be impressed, first of all, if she does listen. That's awesome. And secondly, Coach, thank you for that. I appreciate you. You've unsolicited texted me or DM'd me too and supported me. So I appreciate that, goes both ways. And yeah, long overdue in my opinion, but I know everyone will get value from you as well. And Coach, we talked about a little bit just offline before we got on, a little bit of humility, but also a little bit of you just staying present all the time and not like considering what you've accomplished, what you've done. Because when I read it, when I shared it with everyone at the beginning, it's pretty incredible what you've accomplished in your coaching career.
Oh, thank you. We've been really blessed to have some opportunities that I think have been unbelievable from the administrations that I've worked for, the athletic directors that I've had. The places that I've been, they've been fabulous. Chris, the reality of this is I've had unbelievable assistant coaches and really special players that were incredible people. And I think that's what's led to a little bit of success that we've had. I think for me, I think the reality of our experiences are being present and having a deep sense of gratitude for wherever we are. And I think if you unlock that, and you sit in that posture, you have a chance to affect others in the positives. My hope is to stay in that lane.
I love that. And it was a quick AI search, coach, but there's very few coaches in college basketball that ever coached as head coaches at the same school over two different times. I know Sean Miller at, I think it was Xavier, and then Lou Henson at New Mexico State. And I'm sure there's a few others I'm missing, but that's pretty unique in and of itself and a testament to how they perceive you and how they value there as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many have done it. I tell the story all the time, because many will ask me, why did you leave Liberty in the first place? And honestly, it was through prayer and what we felt led by the Lord to do, because Dick Bennett, Tony's dad, was and is a huge mentor or influence in my life. And having had the opportunity to get to know Coach Bennett, the elder Coach Bennett, has been monumental in my growth. Because of that relationship, I got to know Tony. I actually tried to hire Tony when I was the head coach at Colorado State. He was coming off an NBA contract, and back then it was the restricted earnings position. And yeah, he went from making millions to getting offered $18,000. Needless to say, he said no. But Tony and I stayed in touch, and when he asked me to come be a part of his staff, I hesitated at first because I never left Liberty for what it wasn't. Honestly, Chris, it was just this calling that we felt we needed to honor. And that was to go and serve instead of being served. And so I spent 6 years with Coach at UVA and loved my experience there. It was a master's class. We can talk more about that, but the things that I got to witness, because Tony didn't need my help. That dude, he's way beyond his years. Hall of Fame coach, he didn't need me, but I had a chance to witness firsthand some things that I was able to absorb or accrue in order to help build what I think I needed to come back to Liberty and be a better coach than I was the first time.
We'd love to hear some of those things, Coach. You're making these questions very easy.
Yeah. So I often get asked, do you run the pack line defense in its entirety the way Coach Bennett does? And my answer is we try to. We're probably the JV version. Because quick story, Chris. Like, when my last 2 years at Virginia, I think we were 31-4 and 30-3 or something like that. We lost, or 30-7. We lost 11 games in my last 2 years. We were ranked number two in the country for 9 weeks and ended up going to a Sweet 16, lost to Michigan State, and then the round of 32, lost again to Coach Izzo's team. But so everyone remembers that, the back part of that. This was before their national championship run, but they don't remember what it was like when we first got there. And we were 31-31 in our first 2 years. And I just remember being with Tone and having his dad as a mentor running the pack line defense and what I thought the version of the true pack was. Man, I watched him be unrelenting in his belief that this is the way we're going to compete. And literally, 31-31 is not impressive. We didn't go anywhere, didn't have any postseason. But man, he stayed the course. So having a chance to watch him persevere and stay in what he was convicted by really helped me. Because when I came back to Liberty, we lost our first 13 Division I games, Chris. So I had lost 11 in 2 years and 13 in 2 months. And man, we broke through at the beginning of January at Coastal Carolina. And we were like, I don't know what our record was, 3-13, because we beat three non-ones. And when we won that first game, you would not believe the disposition of our group. Like, they were celebrating in the locker room. We'd be one of the best teams in the league. And man, like, from there, I started to think there is something to this. It's the only defense we have. And we just stayed the course. We didn't get reactive to what results we weren't getting. And that was a direct result of Coach Bennett and watching him be process-oriented instead of results-based.
And it speaks to that stick-with-itness, that relentlessness and belief in yourself and what you're doing as a coach. And this wouldn't surprise you that I get asked many times by online people going in to say things like I'm doing, and they ask me for my number one advice. And I say, stick-with-itness.
Yeah.
You just got to stick with it. Because it takes a long time to get to the point that it obviously transfers the way you want. And that comes back to your story. I'm curious, Coach, about the pack line, just in the sense that I think we all know the general idea of it, because obviously Coach Bennett, OG Coach Bennett, the original one, He influenced so many coaches like myself, not just about the pack line, but mover blocker and the concept there. And then obviously small sided games, which he played a lot of small sided games out of the defense, restricted space and different things like that as well. But the pack line itself, what is maybe one or two of the details that maybe we don't think about enough that bring it such power in the college game?
Yeah, the OG Coach Bennett would say simplicity with execution. And it was funny because I was one of the people involved, Ronnie Weideman, myself, when I was with Coach Bennett, Tony. We would get a ton of people that would want to come in and watch our practices. And we had so many requests. We had to limit it to one day a week or whatever. And invariably, I would see all these coaches, like they'd have their notepads out and ready to write down all of our drills and all of our stuff. And they would stop writing about midway through because like the drills that we were doing were so simplistic. Like I'm talking close out, be able to guard the straight line, high hands when you close out, go from on the ball to off the ball and in the gap. Like literally basic, you might do them in junior high or high school, but I'm telling you there, that was the secret in the sauce. Those little habits that we continued to commit to, continue to develop, they became instinctive in games. And I think the thing I tell you about the defense that I believe is the best, when all five guys are on the same page and we're not worried about the one-on-one matchup, but you're playing against our team instead of the individual, like when each guy is connected like that, it's almost when you see great offense and the fluidity of ball movement and player movement. Like defensively, when you're connected like that, you're really hard to beat. And I think both Coach Bennett's had this unwavering conviction, this is the way we're going to compete. So I tell you, it's the constant drill work. It's, yeah, there's little nuances that they would tweak in order to try and complement the personnel that they had. But we basically had the same template every day in practice.
Go a few places. Let's stay on the defense then. In your, because obviously incredible success at Liberty since you've returned 7+21 seasons, I said. With that, what are some things that you've adapted maybe within the pack line? Because obviously offense has changed a lot in that time, the way people are playing offense. And you're one of the reasons I wanted you on is to talk offense. So we'll get to that. But talk to us a little bit about maybe some of the adaptions or some of the things that maybe you do to the pack line to adjust to modern offense.
Yeah, great question and a terrific point. We can't simulate or recreate the length that Coach was able to get in the ACC. It's just harder to do at this level. And in the new portal era or NIL, like there's a commodity and positionally that like you just have to adhere to. So because we don't have the same length, it's hard to post trap the way we did at UVA because honestly, Coach Bennett was elite at it. So we've altered our post trap a little bit. Like we'll come from a different position instead of always post to post. We'll take it on and off. Like sometimes we're in it, sometimes we're not. That's probably one of the major differences. I think because of the 3-point line, your gap integrity can be compromised if you're not careful. We really try and emphasize that in practice. Where's my man? Where's the ball? And I wish I could give you some of the quote unquote secrets, but it's really nothing fancy. Our defense is not groundbreaking. We try and be hard to play against and our guys are committed to it. And Chris said, I just think again, man, to your point earlier, like this is the only defense we practice. We don't, and that's not for everyone. Like I'm not saying that's the best way to do it, but it's the way that I know and I'm convicted by. And I had a mentor. I've had many mentors. It's actually something that I want you to ask me about because one of my mentors said we should always make our decisions based on our convictions and not just our opportunities. You see, if we keep that practice up, we'll avoid the propensity to water down our conviction to fit the opportunity. And man, so I know what I'm convicted by, and I'm not saying I'm always going to be right or whatever, but I am saying our guys know what to do on that end of the floor every single possession. And that gives me a little sense of security that if your offense is good enough to beat our defense, then man, you got us. We'll try and do better the next time. But it's been something that piece of advice it's really helped me in all aspects of my life, not just my career or my job, but in my relationships and in the way I lead my life.
I love that point, Coach. And I will ask you about mentors and just piggybacking on that, like clarity beats complexity. And one of the main reasons we know based on a lot of research over the last 20, 30 years, especially over the last 10, is the amount of reduction in anxiety for people when they have clarity. Because the brain is actually proven that it wants to seek clarity. So I'm imagining that's something that you're providing your players so they get to play with more freedom because of the clarity you're giving them.
Yeah, really good. Confusion, it slows you down. It's why offensively we don't run a ton of plays. We play out of concepts and randomness that I think benefits us when people are trying to scout us, because oftentimes we don't even know what's coming next. But again, the secret to that sauce is in the players that we recruit, like having guys, we use Brad Stevens' template. You're either a great teammate and fully invested, or you're not. So we're taking guys that are great teammates and that want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. So I think when you have that on the other end of the floor, obviously you can see this, that would be a competitive advantage, if you will, on the defensive end, but offensively too. Like when you remove the confusion and the doubt, should I take this shot? I think there's a chance for a free flow that we're all trying to capture.
I love that.
Hey, Coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group Membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com, contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
And I do want to ask you about offense. Before I do, just as a transition to offense, I'm imagining, again, just a theory, Coach, because I told you before, you're one of my favorite watches in college because, again, of the conceptual, you play out of a template, but you play conceptually and you're always running some really good actions, or your players are, I should say. Yeah. I'm curious, your time at Virginia and watching that defense and being around that defense for so long against really elite teams probably informed you a little bit about offense too, didn't it?
Oh man, great point. Quite honestly, when you're an assistant coach, you don't have the daily responsibility that the head coach does. So it gave me some mind space back. I think I was a head coach for 13 years before I went with Tone. And just being able to sit and watch, and I would always marvel at the teams that gave our defense trouble, because I was confident in the way we defended people. Like after year two and three, like you could tell like our guys got it. Like they had a defensive confidence that was supreme. Like I would admire I remember Bob McKellip's Davidson team gave us a lot of trouble with how much pressure they put on you from the onset. The moment they take the ball out, like you better get back and have a set defense. And they're constantly putting you in compromising actions defensively. Rick Byrd was another. Like we drew Belmont in the first round of the tournament one of my years, and it was my scout, and I was sick, Chris. I was like, oh my gosh, how are we going to guard them? And we ended up winning the game, but I went to see Coach Byrd the next year, and he was another mentor. Yes, without a doubt. And we steal from everyone. Like if they run good stuff, and I think it would give our defense trouble, I'm going to, and I probably don't do a great job of taking plays, but I will take concepts. Because and try and fit them into our fabric. Like I can't. Matt Painter, Ben McCollum, Josh Schertz. There's so many guys. Lenny Acuff. There's so many guys that I've tried to like, oh man, I like that. And McDermott from Craig Knight. You probably know that there's a host of them. But I just, man, I don't have many other hobbies. I just try and pick up a concept or a trend or two that I think would fit with our personnel. And then see how we guard it in practice. And if we can't guard it or we struggle with it, you better believe we're going to implement it.
I love that, Coach. Let's go there a little bit, because I love that aspect of coaching. And you asked me previously what I missed. It's that idea of, oh, I see something and then I want to go try it. But talk to us about that, because it doesn't always work, does it?
Yeah, no. And your podcast is one of the reasons why Derek Johnson, our associate head coach, says you can do anything you want, but you can't do everything you want. And I, after every guest that I listen to, I sit there and I write it down and say, oh, that's good. That's good. You got to make sure it's a part of what you believe in, because just because someone else does it and someone else does it well, doesn't mean it's going to fit to your personnel. That's why I give a precursor to the people that come and they want to run the pack or they want to run our offense. Hey, be careful. Just know that you have the personnel and the elasticity to do this, because there's a lot of days when it looks messy. And Chris, I think that's part of our growth as coaches, right? As men, like sometimes you got to be okay with messy. We stunk the other day in practice, and I was able to leave it and not control it or not wear them down or verbally be negative to them. We talked about it at the end and we left, and we hopefully will have a better practice the next day. You got to be okay with it not looking the way you want, because quite honestly, we can control practice as much as we want, so we feel better when we go home. But when we're in games, we can't stop play. Like they got to be able to navigate the heart.
I love this. I love talking just in coaching basketball, et cetera, with you. But offensively, then share with us a little bit. Are you starting with a template? Is that what you're, are you starting with a template? And then from there you design the actions that'll fit the personnel?
Honestly, it really depends on who we're playing against and what personnel group we have on the floor. And like we've had in the past some triggers, the guys at the post position that could help start our offense, whether they were in the action off the ball or whether we brought them to a ball screen or they came with a DHO. So that randomness is completely up to them. Derek Johnson, I mentioned him, our associate coach, he does a great job of building little concepts in our practices and our little splits. And we play a ton of 5-on-5 because again, I want to watch the practice film afterwards to see what gave us problems guarding. And if it gives us enough trouble, I want to keep rehearsing that because I think it would give other people trouble. So you know, what's unique about us, like you could play us in January and play us again in March, and we could be running way different stuff than we did in January, just because of how it evolves and the different personnel groupings on the court. So long-winded answer to your question, it's random. Sometimes, yeah, we'll start in a formation and we'll have some actions or some reads that we're looking for. Sometimes they don't even look over most of the time, they don't look over to the bench. They just get to a starter and try and play behind him.
So connect that for us then. How are you developing that in practice? That type of freedom and that type of conceptual play?
Yes, because we play the same defense against everyone. We'll have a scout team that will play different defenses, whether it's drop coverage, whether they level show, whether they really flood on the weak side. We'll put some randomness defensively to our scout team and try and rehearse different concepts against different coverages. And that's done in little breakouts. Like we'll have an offense-defense split that both our coordinators will manage. And like, I'm just watching. Like, I think I'm over myself enough to be able to say, hey guys, you got this. Cause I'm way better at the whole than I am the parts. And it took me years to be able to be comfortable with that. But man, like we've had great assistants, as I mentioned, and I just trust them with it. Hey, we'll talk about what we're trying to accomplish, but then they'll build the little nuances of it. And then I watch, evaluate, I make decisions on personnel and who gets an opportunity to play what role in our offense or defense. And we go from there.
What are some things you're doing then within this to get your players to understand, to say, hunt certain advantages within these conceptual offensive situations?
We're always trying to take what the defense gives us, right? That makes it a lot simpler than us like being able to, hey, you got to run this play. And don't get me wrong, there is some necessity to that as well. But I think we're really just trying to read your coverage, okay? Okay, if you're choosing to play us this way, then we think this will be open. And if it's not open, it's okay, get to the next action. Because that eliminates the slowdown. Oh man, I made a mistake or it didn't work. And now what do I do? Get to the next action. And when you have that, I think you call them get catches, when you, whether it's a get catch or whether you're going to a low or high split or however it is, it's that continuity of freedom that I think they experience and trust that most of the time will make us hard to guard.
So I have to ask you about delay action, because you've traditionally run a lot of triggers out of delay, right? And again, intentionally, unintentionally, whatever, that's very popular, obviously, through the NBA on down. So maybe what are some lessons you've learned from playing through the trail big at the top or the player at the top in terms of five out actions?
He's got to be a great decision maker. Like, you can't put the ball in the hands of someone that can't make great decisions, because ultimately it's going to slow your offense down by 0.5 to 1 second. And that's too much in this day and age of college basketball. So if that guy is a great decision maker and he's super unselfish, you got a chance for some fluidity that's hard to guard. So again, I know it'll sound remedial, but that's what we recruit. So it makes us look like, man, we really know what we're doing, but it's the players and the way they adjudicate the decisions and the reads and the concepts that I think make it sometimes difficult to guard.
I'm curious then, in the teaching process with that player, you recruit to that position, you've got a good decision maker there. Are you giving them freedom initially and then they're going to figure it out? Or are you saying, hey, here's two possibilities initially, and then we'll gradually add possibilities?
Yeah, great question. So in the summertime, we were playing 5-on-5. I'm talking a ton. We'll do some skill work in the 4 hours a week. I'd say we'd have 2 30-minute skill days. The rest of them are 1 hour, 3 days a week. And I'd say 75% of that practice, we're playing 5-on-5, because I want to know what their strengths are. Again, Coach Johnson says, be great at what you're good at. So to answer your question, we find out what we think are his strengths or their strengths, and we try and maximize that in our personnel grouping. We'll dial, like, if someone has a deficiency in one area, but he's capable enough to quarterback, obviously we'll be in the film room with him. We'll say, hey, maybe consider this read, or we'll teach him, we'll show him Jokic from Houston and say, hey, think about doing it this way. But it's not a hard, fast, this is your rule, and you got to do it that way. Because again, that slows us down.
So I love that you said that, and I had an idea that you did that. The playing 5-on-5 part. I did a clinic last week in Orange County with high school coaches, and I went in and I said, this is the first thing I would do at the beginning of the season, the first practice. And as you can imagine, it was playing 5-on-5, actually from inbound, sideline inbound, baseline inbound, play till there's a score. And I said it for the exact same reason you said it. Guys, you got to figure out who can do what can do, and don't come in with a predetermined notion, because again, a lot of these players have evolved, good or bad, throughout that offseason. For you, that's such a wonderful time to be able to assess and develop, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And man, it's why I love listening to you. Let's be honest, like, men love control. We love to control it because we get a chance to do this. And sometimes on a large stage, sometimes we can garner identity from it. That used to be me, full disclosure again. Like, I had all these different jobs. When I became a head coach at Portland State, and I got the job because no one wanted it, they were on probation, or they banned the program from the Freeman Williams years in 81 and were on probation or didn't have a program for 18 years. And I think I was one of the two people that applied. Jim Stirk hired me. And man, we had quick success there. No one had any expectations. We were rated the last program in the country, and we won. And like, it was addictive, the good things that people were saying about us. I got offered the job at Colorado State and we won there. And again, people are saying good things about us. And man, I was just in this sprint to prove that I was enough. And like, I didn't get to play Division I. I played for a great man at Seattle Pacific, Claude Terry. But I had this gaping hole that, like, I had something to prove. And whatever it was in my youth that kind of created that, man, I was getting my identity in what other people would say about me, or I was trying to fill that doubt that I had by being enough, by taking these jobs and trying to win. So that chase, Chris, it became so exhaustive. I moved, or we moved, my wife and I want to say 5 times in 10 years. And finally, I got to my dream job. My dad played at New Mexico. I thought that was the end all be all. Like I wanted that job all my career. I wanted to play there. My dad was an incredible role model in my life. He had passed away before I took the job, but I wasn't going anywhere from there. 3 years there, we go to the NCAA tournament with Danny Granger. And then 2 years later, midway through the fifth year, I got let go and called Coach Bennett. He said, finish out the year. And you don't want those guys to think that you're quitting on them. And I did that. And I was miserable, man. And that's when Liberty called. And 3 weeks after being fired, God picked me up out of Albuquerque, put me in Lynchburg, Virginia. And my life categorically started to change. I started becoming less identified by what I did, what I had, or what other people think about me. And that fear, that doubt, that, let's be honest, all of us have it. Whether it's we don't think we're good enough, or like we might think we're a disappointment, we're not smart enough, whatever. Like we all have that core hole that we have to address. And for me, I've done it with my faith in Jesus Christ. But like I'm telling you, you've got to have, there's got to be a shift in your life where you go from me-centric to other-centric if you're going to add anyone, any value to anyone else's life. And that shift started for me after I got let go at New Mexico.
It's a great message, Coach, to all of us to remember. And that getting over ourselves type of thing and to be able to step into our purpose is such a beautiful thing. And not everyone gets there. And it's a blessing when you do. I know that for sure.
And there's some freedom in it. Amen.
Absolutely, Coach. And you asked me again offline about doing this. And I feel the freedom in being able to share, be able to authentically connect with people like you, to not have an agenda, really. Yeah. And it's such a beautiful thing to be able to operate that way in life. And yeah, no, I'm so glad you shared that.
Yeah, Chris, you can tell. Like, I'm one of thousands that admire the work you do. And you can tell this platform that you have isn't about you. And I'm telling you, it's an incredibly attractive quality from an individual when they really are genuinely concerned about making their space better, like whatever small role they have in it. And I think that's why so many admire and appreciate the work that you do.
Well, I appreciate that, Coach. It's been wonderful to be able to do this. And talk to us then. We said, let's come back to mentors, Coach. Let's talk to us about the value of mentors and maybe share some of the value that mentors have provided you.
Yeah, I call them my protection team because of some of the stuff I vulnerably shared with you. Like I want men in my life that I can be the real me. Like I don't have to give a presentation of what I want them to think about me. And because I can be truthful about whatever my struggle is or my fear is, they've shepherded me along in a way that I'm comfortable in my own skin. Like I'm okay with saying, hey man, I'm triggered by whatever it is. We lose the game or we're on a 2-game losing streak and man, I'm starting to doubt. And instantaneously, when I share that, they'll bring me back to scripture or a message or speak into my identity. Hey, this is what you do. It's not who you are. And make sure you stay in your convictions. Like, why are you doing this? And those men, and there have been many, I'd be remiss if I started naming them all and I missed one, because if they ever listened to it, I wouldn't want them to feel like their impact wasn't much. But men like Brett Fuller, Jamie Winship, Eric Nelson, Bill Thrall, like these men have been, Claude Terry, my college coach. I played for Randy Bennett's dad, Tom Bennett. He was hugely influential in me knowing and understanding how to appropriate a role on a team. Yeah, I'm going to miss a couple, but those men have been unbelievable for me because of one reason, and when I was able to trust them with me. And if you don't have anyone in your life that you can be the real you with, oh man, I pray you find somebody. Because there's a freedom in being able to walk alongside with or journey with someone that can help you be the best version of you.
And you referenced a little bit about us being men. One of the hard things for men to be is vulnerable, right?
Oh, no doubt.
Be vulnerable and be authentically yourself. And that's such a beautiful message that you just shared. And I know one of those big steps in my life was getting to the point of being able to be vulnerable with people. And it just makes it easier. And also speak to the fact, coach, that they don't have to be basketball coaches, do they, to be mentors if you're a basketball coach?
Only a couple. Coach Bennett, my college coach, I mentioned Tom Bennett. But and I walk alongside with a bunch of coaches, but most of the men in my life, like Jamie Winship, is an author. He's a former FBI, or he worked for the State Department, was a police officer in DC. That man's been unbelievable for me, knowing my identity and walking in that. Pastor Brett Fuller is he leads a church, was a chaplain for the Redskins. So they're men that I just, again, I was able to receive, which is hard for us to do as well. Able to receive their love that was without condition. And because of that, because it's really hard. You mentioned vulnerability. Like, I don't think you can authentically give away what you don't possess. I possess the love and the unconditional, unearning aspect of being okay with falling short, not being enough. I received it from those people. So guess what? I can give it away to our players. When they're not feeling the best version of themselves, I can come alongside of them because I know what that feels like. And I'll say this lastly about mentors, man, because again, I think it's really hard for human beings to do what they've never seen. So like being able to have people in our lives that we've seen and they've modeled for us what it's like to be over ourselves or vulnerable or walk in your true identity, man, it's made a categorical shift in my daily pursuit.
Mentorship, one thing. Another thing, coach, is to be able to sustain a career. And the older I get, the more I admire people like yourself who have sustained a career over years and changes and all the ups and downs that come with coaching. And I think these are great lessons for all young coaches that listen to hear. So can you frame it for us a little bit? Talk to us about being able to sustain a career.
Yeah, that's why I love listening to you. I don't like listening to myself, but I think there's a sovereignty that I've had that God's allowed us to have some success to be able to. I love being at Liberty because of the alignment, the university's mission, our president and AD. Like, I think they're as good as anywhere in the country. And I've had unbelievable ADs. But again, I'll go back to that deep sense of gratitude for where you are. And I mentioned earlier, like, I was in this sprint to get to the highest level, to have the best chance to get to the NCAA tournament, to be able to validate the reason I was in coaching. That was so unsustainable. So I think for me now, like being able to have a daily appreciation for today has allowed me to operate in freedom. Another saying we have, what you do every day is way more important than what you do every once in a while. And man, I'm waking up in the morning, going on my walk and just asking God, hey, who do you say I am? And trying to ask him, what do you want me to know today? What do you want me to do? And having a great appreciation that I get to do something that I love.
I love that. And I'm curious, as a young coach, though, like to a certain extent, you needed that sprint, right? You needed that kind of that competitive kind of fire to do your best and to be your best and those different things. And do you feel that is necessary at some of those younger ages? And then you evolve over time, as you've referred to throughout this podcast, you become more comfortable with yourself.
Yeah, great point. I think I'd answer that. Like Paul David Tripp says in his book, we're all hardwired for glory. The problem is when we chase the wrong glories. Yeah, my passion, my love for the game, and again, had great mentors in this game to be about the right stuff, that fueled me. Like you can't coach without having this unrelenting sense of competitiveness. But man, when it's your whole world, like when you lose a game or when you feel like you didn't accomplish the desired result, man, it can be so crippling. Yeah, I think to your point, I think there's a balance. And I think that's what mentorship has helped me become very comfortable with. And also think knowing your why. Joe Erman has a book, Inside Out Coaching. You may have read it. Have you read it?
Yep, absolutely great book.
Just in the beginning of it, like it talks about the four questions. Why do I coach? Like that in itself is something that you have to answer because it needs to be a conviction in your life. why do I coach the way I coach? Is it because you were coached like that yourself? Or like, why do you coach the way? Are you your true self, or are you imitating someone else? Then what's it like to be coached by me? Oh man, I'm telling you, man, there's a humbling that comes if you're honest with yourself, or you trust someone enough to ask them, hey, tell me the truth. What's it like to be coached by me? And then lastly, what's your barometer of success? And man, I read this book when I was at UVA the first year with Coach Bennett. And again, it reframed, okay, man, you got to develop some convictions about why you do this. And now I just try and stay true to that, the answer to those questions.
So much gold throughout this, Coach. And that's a huge one. What's it like to be coached by me?
Yeah.
If we all just reflected on that more, obviously the experience for your athletes would improve immensely. But also as a parent, as a human being, if we just reflected on that as a human being, we'd all be better for each other.
Yeah, man, that's so well said. I mean, and again, there's so many, like Rick Barnes used to coach a certain way and his daughter convicted him on the way he was doing things. And I've seen one of his practices, like, he's so much more, he has so much greater of an impact now than he did then because of his shift. And I just think the reward in changing our posture that way, oh man, it can benefit so many other lives that you would, like at the end of the day, they're not going to ask like, how many wins did you have? They're going to ask about how did others experience you? And I want to be successful that way a lot more than I want to just win the game.
Coach, this is just incredible for me. Thanks for sharing. And I got to ask you, since this ball's been behind your back, those people that can see the video, there's this basketball behind Coach. And now you can see the full basketball. I'll post a picture online too. But talk to us about that ball.
Yeah, I'm in my office. It's just a life verse that it's really important to me. It's in the book of John, chapter 15, verse 5. It says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me, I will remain in you, and you will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. And it's a daily reminder for me, this is not about me. I have to continue to ask God to be present in my room every single day that I exist. And man, it's helped form my identity. Like I know that it's not in my strength that anything worthy or eternal can be accomplished. I know that it's in my faith. And I'll leave you with this, Chris. Like one of my mentors that I've garnered a great deal of growth from is Jamie Winship. And he talks about rooms. And he said, you should never walk into a room and get your identity from that room, or you should never lose your identity in that room. And man, that gave me so much clarity. Like we walk in a room every day of our lives where we feel like we shouldn't be here. We're not, even in the arena. Like we got boat raced in the NCAA tournament on the national stage. And man, I was so down. But reminding myself that like I'm still the same person. I'm not less of a coach because we got beat so badly. Like I'm still me. And it goes back to it's what I do and not who I am. But this verse, and again, having people that will constantly remind me that are on my protection team makes it a lot easier to realize where my source of strength comes from.
Coach, I cannot thank you enough for sharing the game. I am so grateful we both persevered and made this happen, and the audience will be grateful as well. So thanks for sharing the game with us.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you having me on. Honored by your request.